Twister Talk with Gary, Sue, and Brandon starts now.
It's a twister! It's a twister!
Back up! Back up! Back up!
And welcome to Twister Talk. My name is Gary. Thanks for joining us. We're going to pick up with our interview with James Spann. Now, James Spann is a television meteorologist and podcast host based in Birmingham, Alabama. He currently works for WBMA-TV, ABC 33/40, and the Birmingham's ABC affiliate. He has been in the weather field doing television weather since 1978, and he celebrates 28 years of working at WBMA. Let's get back to our interview right here on Twister Talk.
I would like to switch gears just a little bit here. And if I could ask you a couple of points I'd like to bring up. One is if you could walk us through your typical day or whatever, you know, comes close to a typical day for you. And also, what would you say has been the biggest and most significant shift in thinking that you've witnessed regarding how weather broadcasting is approached and how it should be approached?
Well, and you know, my day, I sleep 3 hours a night. It's no secret. I sleep from 1 to 4 a.m., which is not healthy. But in order to do the job right, you pretty much have to, you know, work those kind of hours, because most people don't get weather on television. You know, the Ron Burgundy newscast, those are kind of the things of the past. They get it on their phone, and they expect you to be there on the social platforms. And, of course, there's multiple social platforms. I do a morning shift from 4 to 7 a.m. where I'm doing live stuff on the social platforms and, you know, write a discussion on the blog and go on television. And then after that, I speak in schools every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work the TV shift from 1 to 11. And again, it's not just TV. That's a very small part of what I do. It's mostly social, digital. And you know, while we're talking here, I'll have probably 100 messages that have come in that require a response.
Wow.
And again, it takes a lot of work, but if you love weather, it's the greatest thing ever. If you don't like weather, this is the worst job in the world. But we have to be there for people when they need us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not at our convenience, it's at their convenience. And the concept of, you know, get your nice hairdo and get your teeth all white and get you some nice TV clothes and you go on these Ron Burgundy newscasts, it's sunny skies for your Tuesday. Those days passed us by years ago.
Yeah.
People are getting information, of course, on their phone app. And again, for us to be relevant, we have to have a relationship with people, and you have to work the social platforms. You might hate the social platforms, but that's where people live today.
Absolutely.
You cannot go on television during a tornado warning and expect people to trust you or believe in you on the spot. Trust takes time. It takes mm-hmm. a while. And to establish that trust, you have to be there for them on quiet days and bad days. And again, that social media gives you the chance to do that. And right. So I work it pretty hard.
Yeah.
I get home about midnight.
Well, there you go. And folks, you can also check, there is a great weather website. That's AlabamaWX.com. And James, along with some other people, work with them there. Great history stories, great updates on weather, just all kinds of great, to me, a great potpourri. If you get a chance, go there. Again, that's AlabamaWX.com. And man, there's a whole bunch of great information there and the history of Alabama weather and forecasting and everything else. It's a lot of fun. And you can also, James is all over on YouTube. I mean, my gosh, you're on there a lot. But again, so he gives a daily weather briefing also that you might want to check out. I believe you do it, what is it, three times a day or twice?
I do it twice. I'll do it about 5:15 in the morning and about 2:45 in the afternoon. After we do this, I'll do one. And we push those out live on YouTube and Facebook. And again, it's not your traditional TV, you know, sunny skies for Tuesday. This is a real look at real data, and you know, I'm a straight shooter. And one of the biggest problems we have today is the fear mongers.
Yeah.
And it's rampant. And these are mostly weather enthusiasts, and quite frankly, most of them are teenagers. They don't mean anything malicious by what they do, but they're constantly forecasting deadly tornado outbreaks, yes, 2 weeks in advance.
Yes.
Hurricanes, 2 weeks in advance.
I see some of that stuff pop up on YouTube.
Right. And these guys, some of these guys are very good at what they do, and they're making piles of money,
yeah,
from the influencer pools because people are just sucked into it. And what I don't understand, of course, most of their predictions never come true, but people follow them with a religious-like zeal.
Yes, yes,
that's very true. They send them money. I mean, some of the stuff you watch is this bizarre combination of a Jerry Lewis telethon, where the more money they make, the more outrageous they are about weather. And it's, we live in very bizarre times, but I do think outside, most people have a hunger for a straight shooter, somebody that's going to be serious when you need them to be serious, but at the same time, when the weather's not that serious, you're going to be told that. And that's what I try and do, and I think people are seeking that out because, I think people are getting kind of tired of the fear-mongering they hear.
Well, I tell you, James, if I hear bomb cyclone or snowageddon one more time, I'm going to have to be restrained because that's all I hear. It's like, oh, come on. Really, and yeah, you're right. I mean, blizzards are we're all going to be buried by 40 feet of snow, and it'll rain for 40 days and 40 nights, whatever. And yeah, everybody when they miss it, and they miss it all the time. You never know. There's no back. You know, there's no like, oh, I can't believe this guy's nuts, and they just keep sending him money. Speaking of crazy times, let's jump on to the Dixie outbreak of 2011 because you were on the air for, I think, almost 12 hours, I believe, if I remember reading that right. And I've watched a good amount of the video of you and your and other people reporting on that. And what's your memories of that experience?
Well, and you know, even though you know it's going to be a bad day, you don't know how bad in the days leading up to the event. But it was a well-forecast event. Mm-hmm. I think we did the best we could at the time. And for those that don't know, in my state on that one day, we had 62 tornadoes and 252 people died on my watch in one day, which is inexcusable for anybody. And people don't understand what that's like to have that burden on you. And I don't go back and play mental gymnastics on the day, but what we learned is that we're probably not as good as we think we are. And the physical science could not have been better. In some cases, the lead time was 35, 40 minutes.
Right.
But yet all these people died. And so we went to social scientists. And I think what we learned is the fact that we really don't understand behavioral science, human behavior. Mm-hmm. And we're asking people to do something. And we have to integrate behavioral science with physical science to be successful on tornado days. And they have taught us a lot since 2011. We have worked very carefully with these brilliant social scientists, and we know now the things that went wrong and some of the things we didn't do right. Mm-hmm. And the number one reason people died that day was the siren mentality. That's killed more people than anything else. The notion that you're going to hear some magical World War I air raid siren before a tornado, which is absolute insanity. And they serve a purpose. They reach a limited number of people outdoors, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to move beyond that. We've got to get a weather radio in everybody's home and business. And we've got to move past the siren mentality. And quite frankly, the second reason that most people died was my lack of telling people to put on a helmet. Most people that die in tornadoes, it's blunt force trauma above the shoulders. And by putting on a cheap bicycle helmet, a batting helmet, a football helmet, a motorcycle helmet, that increases your chance of survivability by over 50%. And I didn't mention it once. And I knew it on that day, and I just didn't mention it once. I hate that. And those are just examples of what we learned on that day. But what I've almost finished doing is memorizing the names of everybody that died. 251 names. The death toll was 252. We had a lady that was pregnant, the baby didn't have a name, and she lost her baby. But that's very motivating for me. Very, very intensely motivating to be sure that this doesn't happen again.
Well, Brandon and I, and our other co-host Sue, Brandon, how many times we've gone over that when we've done shows? Weather radio, cell phone, some way to get warnings. Don't rely on Mr. Siren telling you at 3 o'clock in the morning. And we have like yourself, James, we have beat that dead horse, and we just tell people almost every show, you need to have a radio, you need to have a phone, you've got to have more than a siren giving you weather advice, because otherwise you're not gonna see it or hear it in time. And if there's no power, no siren. What does that tell you? Well, there you go. But if you have a weather radio with a battery operating, you could hear something be life-saving. It's really frustrating for yourself and so many others. I've talked to other people who said the same thing. You know, they have to get out of the siren mentality. And it's sad that many areas we haven't. We just assume that's going to take care of us. And we all know what happened places like Joplin, Missouri, later that year in 2011, where, you know, they're setting off the sirens for everything there, that when it did go off for a tornado, everybody just sloughed it off until 160 people were dead.
Yeah, and that's one thing we also have to work on in the weather enterprise, and this is our fault, is the high false alarm ratio. Mm-hmm. We have a warning addiction problem in this country right now, not only among the weather enthusiasts on social media, but within the professional weather enterprise.
Right.
You've got a lot of weather service offices where their false alarm ratio is almost at 90. 90% of warnings are false alarms.
Wow.
And nobody will listen to you if all these warnings are fake. It's cry wolf.
Mm.
And you've got to get your finger off that warning button. And you've got to go back to basic science. And while maintaining a high POD, which is probability of detection, you got to get that FAR way down. At one point here in Birmingham, they got it down to 18. I never, ever, ever thought it would be that low in my career.
Mm.
But it's running in the 20s right now. And it went back in 2011, Birmingham's FAR was 83. 83% of warnings were false alarms. And we heard this a lot in the verbatims. We hear warnings all the time and nothing ever happens.
Mm.
And people didn't do anything. So as a weather enterprise, we have got to stop this overwarning and reduce the false alarms. We've got to do that. And that culture cannot permeate the weather enterprise.
And that really ties back to the fear mongering.
Yeah, it does. It does big time. James, let me just ask you a question about your, you know, in regards to how you, you know, here you are, you're doing this live television, and then you're seeing, you know, they're showing you the here's the SkyCam tower or whatever, and suddenly you're seeing this massive funnel. What's that, you know, just on a personal level, what is it like when you see something like that and you realize, you know, people could die or people could be injured, but to see the power of these storms, it's like doing it live on television. What's that like?
Well, the one thing about it, we're so busy, you don't have time to get hung up in the emotion, which is a good thing. What people don't understand, if they could walk a mile in my shoes on a tornado day, when I'm on that green wall, I have 5 Slack chat sessions open with National Weather Service offices that cover our state. I have a Slack session with our spotters internally to the TV station here. I've got all the social platforms open. I've got X, I've got Facebook, I've got Instagram, I've got TikTok, because young users are going to put their tornado videos over there and they'll tag me there. And you got to monitor that. And then I've got all of our live streams from our reporters and our people out in the field. And then I've got somebody talking in my ear.
Yeah.
And you have to have this bizarre ability to multitask to be successful. And that takes about every single CPU cycle in your brain.
Yeah.
So when you've got a tragic, tragic day like an April 27, we know it's history, we know it's happening, but I missed it. I totally missed the historic nature of that day working it because I was so busy. And quite frankly, I'm glad that I missed it, because to be successful, to tell a coherent story, you can't start thinking, man, this is history here.
Right.
There are dozens of lives that are on the line. They're going to listen to every word I say. They're going to watch my body language. And I'm thankful I didn't get hung up in that, because if you do, you won't be that good on the air. You've got to be at the top of the game.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, that's something that, you know, we're both kind of like, wow. Just thinking really quickly, that would be the only way to approach it. There would be no other way to approach it. You have to be detached from what's going on. Or, like you said, it would just overwhelm you. And you get a lot.
And I'll say, I had a strange situation 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the anniversary was 2 days ago, March 25th of 2021. Where we're a very aggressive long form coverage market here, and an EF3 tornado hit my house when I was on the air.
This
was pretty terrifying. You talk about the distraction of a lifetime, but
really?
I texted my wife, and we have a tornado shelter rated, you know, for an EF5, and she was in the shelter, and she texted back and she said she's there, and I knew that she was going to be fine. But you're human, you don't know if you're going to have a house.
Right.
You don't know if the roof's come off the house. You don't know what it's going to look like. And it was the distraction of a lifetime. And if there's any time in my career where I've been a little distracted, that was the day, March 25th of 2021. But you can't stop. You can't abandon ship. You're in a battle here.
Right.
I knew my wife's fine. She's fine. Let's carry on. Don't lose our focus. Mm. And as it turned out, the roof stayed on the house, which was a miracle because a lot of our neighbors lost the roof. And when the roof goes away, you're in a hotel for 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
We could live there while they fixed the house. There were trees on the house. There's a lot of, damage. It was horrible. Mm. But we had 6 fatalities that day.
Yes.
From another tornado that came later on March 25th of 2021. And again, you just can't stop. So I'd say that's the one time where in my career where if I got a little distracted, it was on that one.
Well, yeah, How could you not? What do you think is that? In your mind, what's some of the greatest leaps of science or everything that's happened in the last few years, with even the last dozen years with tornado forecasting, supercell thunderstorms, and all that? What do you think's been the thing that you said, boy, that's going to make a difference, or that's going to help a lot?
I think it's no doubt it's dual polarization radar. Mm-hmm. When the WSR 88Ds were upgraded to dual pole, and we honestly didn't know the product would be this good, but there's a product in the suite called correlation coefficient. Mm-hmm. And basically what it does, the radar kind of assesses the echoes coming back. And if there's a series of echoes that are different, they don't correlate with the other echoes. There'll be a drop, a negative spot there. And what that tells us, it's not a hydrometeor. It's not a hailstone. It's not a snowflake. It's not an ice pellet. It's not a raindrop. Mm. It's something else. It could be biological. It could be birds, or it could be a part of a building. It could be tree limb. And that ability to detect debris, I think, has changed everything. And what that does, it confirms a tornado warning. And so we have that ability that we did not have in 2011 that's come along since then. And I'd say that's the biggest advancement. It's dual polarization radar and the correlation coefficient product. And, of course, the other thing, too, I think it's the communication we have today with phones. The iPhone came along in 2007. And there's a lot of negative things you could say about the phones and, social platforms and all that. But on the positive side, we do get a lot of images, videos, pictures. And we've learned through social science studies, people don't respond to radar that well. Mm-hmm. To them, all this stuff, it looks like a bucket of spill paint. And we can be on there with our underwear flapping up down our legs. they're just seeing a bunch of colors. But if you can show them a video of a tornado, mm-hmm. photos of damage, they do something about it. And, right. and the ability of us to get that back and throw it on the air in real time has really helped as well.
And thanks for joining us for our second part of our interview with James Spann. He's been the weatherman at Birmingham Tuscaloosa's ABC 33 for 28 years. Hope you've been enjoying the interview as much as we have been doing it. We'll wrap it up for the next episode of Twister Talk for Brandon and Sue. I'm Gary. Have a good one.